What's up, everybody? It's John Bush from Armored Saints sitting here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You are on the road to rock.
Hi, everyone. This is Eric Martin, the lead singer for the band Mr. Big, and you are on the road to rock with Clint Switzer.
Thank you so much, man. I love talking about the things that I love, Clint, and for you to allow me to do it with you. God bless you. God bless the Heartland. God bless America.
You are now on the road to rock. It's not just a podcast. It's an unabashed celebration of rock's living legends. And now, please welcome your host, the master of your rock and roll road trip, Clint Switzer.
And here we are, rocking and rolling through the month of October, or Rocktober, as I have long called it. Thank you so much for joining me here on the road to rock, and we are keeping things rolling. The hits keep on coming here on the road to rock, as this week I'm going to be joined by none other than former Whitesnake guitarist Adrian Vandenberg. His band Vandenberg is getting ready to embark on a winter U.S. tour on the heels of the release of their new album, Sin, which is incredible. I love Adrian's playing. I love the new album. Again, it's called Sin. You can go to the band's website, vandenbergband.com, where you can get the limited edition green vinyl, the CD digipack, or just the digital release. It's all there. The album is Sin. Man, some great tracks on here like Thunder and Lightning, House on Fire, the title track, Light It Up, Out of the Shadows. Vandenberg, man, he's going to talk about coming to America for the first time in the early 80s, opening for bands like Ozzy, for Kiss, as the band Vandenberg, when they released that single, Burning Heart, and then joining Whitesnake, being friends with David Coverdale to this day, maybe doing a final show or two with Whitesnake. This interview is tremendous. I'm a huge Adrian Vandenberg fan. He talks about his Instagram account and how he's extremely unwoke and how he hates cancel culture. He's got this sense of humor and he thinks it should be expressed. So definitely go follow Adrian Vandenberg on Instagram. He is just a tremendous Dutch guitarist. He's been around for over 40 years. And to think about his musical journey as he's going to be doing this co-headlining tour in February, starting in February, with Jeff Tate, formerly of Queensryche. It's going to be great to see him out there presenting like the Vandenberg stuff, the new stuff, and then the Whitesnake stuff, as he was so heavily involved with, you know, the 1987 album that he did the solo on for Here I Go Again, and then the video, and then the tour. And, you know, honestly, for what Adrian is, the respect that he has amongst guitarists is just, it's just astronomical, and it's completely through the roof. And so this, if you worked with Whitesnake, David Coverdale knows great musicians, and that's all he's surrounded himself with over the years. There's just absolutely no doubt about it. And his time in Whitesnake was timeless. Some of the wonderful tracks and songs and albums that he was on, and the tours. We're going to get into all that and much more with Adrian, who, it's been a while. I think he was on the show back in 2020 when Vandenberg released their 2020 album. That was the name, 2020. And now to be back with this new album, Sin. Wish all the success to Adrian and his band, as he's got like this just all-star group, man. His singer, that's going to blow your mind if you listen to this album, Sin, is his singer, Mats Levin, is just this, it's like kind of almost a hybrid between, it's got like some David Coverdale in him. I don't know, he's just got this like kind of even a little deeper voice, a little raspier than David Coverdale. So Mats is great. This album, I really hope that people and rock fans will check this out, because, you know, legendary artists like Adrian Vandenberg to still be releasing material is special, and we should celebrate that. And go check it out. That's all I can say. And go to vandenbergband.com, where you can get all the tour dates, as that tour with Jeff Tate starts February 17th in St. Charles, Illinois. It is going to be tremendous. I'm going to go out to, I'm trying to figure out what show I am going to be getting to. Which one will it be? I'm looking around and I'm like, man, I'd love to go to Nashville or Knoxville, maybe Macon, Tulsa, Fayetteville. There are a lot of opportunities coming up, so I'm going to be around. And I hope you stick with us here on the Road to Rock, because just because the summer tours have kind of come to an end doesn't mean that the rocking ends on here. On the Road to Rock, you can go to our Facebook page, our Twitter, our Instagram, and you can follow us on Starcade Media on YouTube. That's where the video interviews reside. So if I'm doing a podcast, doing an interview 95% of the time, it is right there on the Starcade Media YouTube. Starcade Media, of course, is the larger media umbrella to which everything that we do falls under. So I've been doing this now for 11 years. To be able to interview these artists, it never gets old. It never gets old having your feedback and to, you know, take some of your advice. If you're listening to the show and you want to hear more from this guest or less from me and more of the guest, or you didn't like this guest, whatever it may be, I can't thank you enough for being a part of this for 11 years, to keep this thing going, to think that where this started from and where it is today. It is surreal. It is special. And I keep that in my heart of hearts. So thank you guys so much. And without further ado, got to take you to this week's interview. It is with none other than guitar legend Adrian Vandenberg. Welcome to On the Road to Rock. It has been a while, my friend. Look at you. You don't look a day over 30, 35 years old, Adrian. How do you do it?
Well, I don't know. You know, I really apparently lucked out with the gene pool from my parents, because my mom passed away last year, but she was going to be 95. And she just didn't wake up, you know. She, no pain, nothing. Strong woman. And I do take care of my health in a responsible way. You know, I don't do crazy things. I do some bicycling and some skating, and I love to cook, so I always cook kind of healthy, but a lot of unhealthy stuff too, because I love cream and butter. But I think it's all healthy. I have a personal philosophy about food. You know, I think what people often underestimate also is, of course, it needs to be good ingredients, you know, like fresh vegetables and fruit and all that stuff. But I personally believe that food that makes you feel good, when it's not, you know, hamburgers and greasy roadhouse stuff, it also makes you feel good. But if you eat it every day, you know, you're going to, bam, that's all over. But yeah, I just enjoy the hell out of my life too. And that's like a main ingredient, I suppose.
Well, that's so wonderful to hear. And you're always just such a bright, shining person. And I don't know, you crack me up, because I feel like you and I would get along great just by seeing how funny you are on your Instagram. Some of the stuff you post cracks me up. And the latest one was the Snow White thing, removing the unwanted kiss from Snow White, man. Because we can't have that. So
no, you can't be nice to people anymore. You can't say to a girl, "You look nice today." She goes, "I'm going to sue your ass." You know, it's too bad, because it takes, of course, you know, rape is a totally different story. But these days, you know, people got so overly sensitive. You're going to be careful to make a joke, and they're going to take it personally. I'm so offended.
Well, I'm so glad there's people like you that keep the humor going. You're a funny guy, and that's what it's all about. Comedians, especially in America, I feel bad for comedians, because I don't even know what they're supposed to do half the time with their material for fear of getting canceled or having a backlash.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's weird, the whole the thing that's a hot topic right now, Russell Brand, for instance. If you rape somebody, not good, you know, totally.
No.
But, you know, like those videos circulating where he really grabs like this woman who doesn't seem to object, you know. He goes, oh, Russell. It's a very fine line, and if he went way over it, bam, you know, then you should take your responsibility. But I mean, there's guys who are way less you know, obvious than Russell is, apparently. I think he's a really funny guy, very smart.
Yeah, he is.
He's got a lot of good ideas, and it's another thing, you know. Then I'm always a little cautious. I think, well, maybe it's not just that behind it. Maybe it's just because he's saying a lot of things that a lot of people don't feel comfortable with, politically speaking, you know, because he speaks out.
Right.
And what I often hear is that, you hear politicians, or you hear journalists or whatever going, no, democracy is really important because everybody's got the right to say what they want, unless they don't like the message, you know. Then suddenly, before you know it, you know, you get all kinds of stuff happening to you. And yeah, it's tipping, you know, towing the line at times right now.
Well, you know what? So glad there's people like you. We would get along famously, Adrian. I enjoy every bit of it. And I enjoy the new album, the new Vanderburg album, which is Sin. I mean, just completely blown away by this release. And it's been out now for about a month and a half, or a little over a month, really.
Yeah,
so what's the feedback been like so far? Because everything I see, all the reviews, thumbs up for me, not that matters, but two thumbs up for me. Yeah. What's been the reviews that you've heard?
Yeah, amazing. I mean, you know, it's always a weird thing. I'm sure, you know, every artist feels the same and every artist says the same, because basically you work your ass off on to create this baby, and then you throw the baby into the world and you hope other people like it as much as you do. And then if they do, it's really rewarding. You know, for me, it's never been about money, because I always believe if you do something right and you work your ass for it, the money will come one way or another. It doesn't have to be a lot, you know. For me, it's when I have enough money to make records like this and to survive a period like COVID, it's all good for me, you know. I want to be happy. I think it's a good thing to have a incentive to keep working, because usually you can tell when a lot of artists, or basically anybody for that matter, when you get too comfortable, you sit back, you wake up a little later, you postpone, you know, you take your coffee a little longer before you know the day's over, and you go, oh man, where did the day go? That never works for me, you know. I love to work really hard, and I also love to be like totally unashamedly lazy for a day or 2 days, or fuck it, because I usually get great ideas, you know, when I procrastinate, which is a great word. I always call it like an unrecognized art form, because it's good for your soul and for your body, and you go, okay, you know. In my case, some of my best ideas come when other people would call me lazy, because I'm just walking around the house or cooking something up, and they go, what the fuck are you doing? I go, yeah, I'm just gathering ideas in my head. Yeah, right. But it's usually how it happens, because I burp the ideas into my iPhone, and when it's time to start making a new album, I go by all those ideas, and you go, oh, that's a good one. That one sucks. That's a good one. I'll keep that one. So yeah, that's how it happened with me.
Did you? Because 2020 was such a good album that came out kind of right as COVID was hitting.
Oh,
and
man,
now
yeah.
Here we are 3 years later. Do you feel like that Sin is sort of a sister album that kind of builds off from that? Even like just looking at the artwork, and I know I don't want to get into that, just some of your artistic endeavors, but the cover art is kind of very evocative. And do you feel like it kind of goes off of what you did with 2020 and is almost kind of building off of that album?
Yes, of course. What happened every time in my whole career, if you want to call it that, because for me it's a hobby that went completely out of hand.
That's the best kind.
It is the best kind. Yeah, for me it's always been, I really want to raise the bar with every album I've ever done. And so far I think I've achieved that. And also with this album, I think it's a little bit more intense, which also has a lot to do with Mutz's way of singing. He really digs deep into the songs, you know. He doesn't just sing like a melody like a musical artist would do. You know, la, 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 I'm so heartbroken, I can cry, but at the same time, the dancing and smiling, you know. Mutz really goes into the deep, so that makes a difference for the overall expression of the song, the expressiveness. And I try to dig deeper every time with my playing. I really focus more than I've ever done before on the expressiveness of what I do, and really try to squeeze the last drop of passion out of each of every note. You know, I like to pay attention to how I play it more, almost more than to what I play. You know, it's that's all about if rock doesn't have that fire, you know, it shouldn't be rock, because
sure.
rock needs to be so exciting that you're in your car and you turn on the radio or wherever you play it on, crank up the windows and play it as loud as you can and go, what? You know, you gotta have that feeling. Otherwise, it's punk.
Yes, and that's what I mean. This album is, it's so layered. And your singer Matt, how important is he to not only the Vandenberg sound of these albums, but also when you play live and he does the Whitesnake songs? Because it's like he's so versatile that he can do anything. How important has been your collaboration with Matt as the singer?
Yeah, you know, it's I felt fortunate again to run into Mats when it didn't work out with Ronnie, because our mixing agendas, everybody knows Ronnie does a lot. So when COVID was over, Ronnie already took on a bunch of things, because in Romania, where he lives, they were allowed to start earlier than we were in Western Europe. So by the time we were ready to tour, you know, I didn't want to wait for another 10 months to start touring because Ronnie was too busy. So unfortunately, you know, I had to say goodbye, and I felt really fortunate to run into Mats, because as you can tell, he's a world-class singer, and he sings songs like Still of the Night from Whitesnake just as good as David, you know. So that's also automatically, we come to the situation that we're going to tour the States in February and March, and their repertoire is going to be very Whitesnake heavy, because the promoter told me, basically, I won't say begged me, but he said, man, he said, everybody's been nagging me for years when we would finally start working together. Please come to the States and play Whitesnake material that you were involved in all those years, you know, because people haven't seen me play the States since 1990. So I must have been 2 years old by then.
that tour starts February 17th, and I am excited about it. You're going out with Jeff Tate on a lot of the dates,
yeah.
co-headlining tour. How fun is that going to be? And I think, though, obviously the Whitesnake material will be there, but Adrian, I mean, I feel like you've earned the right, and you have the reputation to kind of play whatever you want. Now, you, of course, will play for the fans, and the fans do want to hear those Whitesnake songs, but you have that respect from people that, whether it be the Vandenberg stuff, anything that you've done throughout your career, I think people would enjoy. So USA is ready for Adrian Vandenberg coming up here starting in February. I got to pick out which show I'm going to be at. There's so many. So many dates.
Wherever. Just let Steve Kerr, you've been in touch with Steve, I suppose.
Yes.
Just let him know, you know, if you want to come to a show, you'll let my manager know. And you're always welcome, man. It's going to be fun, because you can never have too many people who love rock making noise.
That is me, if nothing else. I at least do have that going for me. And so when you're putting together a set list for the shows, whether you're doing some of the shows here coming up in November over in Europe or here in America, how difficult is it to kind of put together a set, especially with a new album out? You have an album out that you came out in 2020 to try to work all those songs in. How difficult is it for you to put together a set list?
Yeah, it is pretty difficult. I could play easily like a 2.5 hour set, but then, you know, it's a co-headlining tour, so you're probably going to get stuck to, you know, like hour and a half, maybe hour and 45 or something. It's kind of difficult because, of course, I want to play songs like Still of the Night and Here I Go Again. At the same time, I want to play songs like Sin and Out of the Shadows or Freight Train. You know, songs from the last two albums, I really wrote them with live shows in mind, you know, because that's one thing that I really learned from touring the States. The songs have a certain groove that work well in arenas and stadiums. You know, they have that American rock feel. Like the song Light It Up from this last album was absolutely written with the arena shows in mind, you know, that are still so very clear in my memory from those 12, 13 years I was with Whitesnake. You know, I really enjoyed the hell out of it. And at the same time, I really, really enjoy clubs, playing clubs, because in all the time with Whitesnake, we didn't do that. We play arenas and stadiums and shit. And I really miss playing clubs, you know, like anywhere between 1,000 and 2,500 people. the vibe is really electric, and the sound's better because, you know, it's not like reverbing in every direction. So it's great, you know. There's just less, a little less women that pull up the t-shirts than it was in those days, because there were 50,000 of them in a 1,500 seater club or 2,000 seater club. There's probably like, well, let's keep it to about 600-700 or something.
Well, that's going to be perfect. And I'm really excited about it. I'm in Kansas City, so I got Tulsa circled on my map here. That's not too far from me. I'm going to be there. That's a great billing. Like, and you, are you someone that, cause I mean, you do some of the Monsters of Rock cruises, you do tour with other bands. Do you have a lot of peers that you feel like that you're, you know, really close to? Is Jeff Tate someone that you've ever, you know, been around with or toured with before, or how did that kind of come to be?
No, it actually, he's got the same management as we do in the United States. So when we signed up with this touring agent, who was really great, he's got some of my favorite artists, you know, like John Waite and Roger Daltrey. He's got a great roster. So when we signed up with him about 5 months ago or something, he said, man, I've got this great idea right away because I'm setting up a tour for Jeff. It would be a perfect combination, which I totally agree on, because as everybody knows, our styles are different, but at the same time, the overlap in crowd is very similar, I suppose. So it was a great idea. I have a lot of friends in the States, since my wife's thinking, you know, like people like Rudy Sarzo, Tommy Aldridge, Brian Pitchy, Doug Aldridge. Man, yeah, a whole bunch of them, you know, and I'm always looking forward to see them and to jam with them. That's definitely going to happen more in the future now. I'm finally got my foot in the door in the States again, you know.
Which is wonderful. And, you know, Adrian, I mean, rock and roll is timeless. There is no age when it comes to rock and roll, right? I mean, Alice Cooper just said he wants to play until he's 90. Now, you look so, we talked about it, you look tremendous. You do have kind of a big birthday coming up, though, in January. How do you feel about turning the next page for another decade?
Yeah, it's the funny thing is, I'm exactly the same as my mom in that respect, you know. She always forgot her age. Like every year when it was her birthday, I go, Mom, do you have any idea how old you are? You know, even the last 2 years when she started dementing a little bit, you know, so that was logical. But when she got to be 93, for instance, I said, Mom, how old do you think you are? She goes, I suppose I have to be like early 70s by now. I go, Mom, you're 93. She goes, you're kidding. You're kidding again. You always make those jokes. I go, Mom, that's the way it is. You're going to be 93. And the way I look at it is, I suppose, quite different than a lot of people do. I think, you know, having the privilege to be allowed to grow older is the biggest present that you can get, provided you make sure you enjoy your life.
Sure.
And a lot of people... they have a lot of, you know, trouble in their life, of course, and bad luck and all the stuff, you know. So for a lot of people, it's of course, more difficult to enjoy every day of their life. And I feel really fortunate because every morning I wake up and go, man, who would have thought that I would still be making rock and roll, the kind of rock that I love. Never had to do a concession musically, thanks to my dad, because... He said, you know, you can study, either go to Academy of Arts or go to Conservatory of Music, whatever you want, as long as you get a diploma that you can make a living off. So I chose art, because I thought if I'm going to end up as a teacher, I'd rather teach art than music, because I don't even have the patience to play scales for myself. You know, I just pick up my guitar, I go, oh, this sounds nice, and then I elaborate on that, and that's it. So, I did teach art for a while when I was just when I just graduated from art university, and I taught art at high school for about 7-8 months.
Yeah.
Until I got fed up with it because I got in trouble with everybody and anybody because I was dating girls from my classroom because they were cute.
Well.
And I was only a couple of years older, so. I thought it was fine, you know, and you get all these discussions. You go, oh, geez, you know, screw that. I'm not going to do that anymore. So I lived from my paintings quite a while. Lived off my paintings, selling my paintings, and making designs for publishing companies and advertising agencies. And with that money, I paid for the demos for the early Vandenberg records.
Yeah, and I just want to get your take on when you first came to America on from the early Vandenberg times. Like, what was it like for you? Just the culture, the lifestyle. I mean, Holland and America, the Netherlands and America. It's not like it's just two completely different places. There's a lot of similarities, but when you came here the first time and you're like opening for bands like Kiss and Ozzy, and like you're touring around and you're eating the food and experiencing the culture, what was that like for you? Was that overwhelming? And did it kind of help you as you, when you took, got the Whitesnake gig, to sort of acclimate to the touring lifestyle?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it definitely did. I suppose every European musician's dream to be able to tour the States. So for me, I was shocked when Burning Heart suddenly became a hit single in the States. I thought, wow, you know. And then touring with Ozzy, of course, as everybody can imagine, it was so much fun. He's such a great guy and so incredibly funny. And he was so generous. Every night we had a sound check. You can use all the lights and the sound that you want. I don't care. It's great. You guys are great. I love you guys. I love everybody. You know, he's just an amazing guy. And that was a great experience. And I've always been really interested in American culture, because a lot of Americans maybe don't realize that a lot of culture comes from America as well. They all look at Europe. They go, oh, all the culture comes from Europe. But there's a different kind of country culture that comes from the States. Like, I've always loved American art, like American hyperrealism, and the funny thing is, we had a very famous Dutch painter, Willem de Kooning, who moved to America when he just started becoming known, and he became very famous in America. So a lot of Americans think he is American, but he's not, you know, he's Dutch. And same goes for Eddie Van Halen, you know, Eddie and Alex are Dutch. A lot of people
right.
know that, but for me, it was a very smooth transition, not just because of Ozzy, but because of, I love to read about different culture and watch movies about it and documentaries and stuff. So I did that a lot. And I went on a feeding frenzy too, you know. I went to in every town that I was in, I looked what the specialty of the town was. Like, for instance, Philadelphia steak sandwich. When we played Buffalo, I went for the original Buffalo chicken wings place. I discovered the Fuddruckers burger chain in California. Amazing burgers. Oh,
In-N-Out burger too. Come on. In-N-Out
burger. Another great one. And Tex-Mex food. I've always been really fond of it. And you have all those great places, you know. So I basically ate my way through the United States, you could say. And then, of course, there's these great bars where girls who kind of forgot to completely put all their clothes on and dance to great rock music, man.
I hate when that happens.
I hate it, but I try to be open-minded about it, you know.
Yeah,
so
me
go,
too.
Okay, I have to, you know, soak up American culture in the broadest sense of the word. So that's what I like to do too.
Well, I want to make sure everybody gets to the website where they can get the album. It's called Sin. It's tremendous. Vandenbergband.com. I mean, 9 sizzling tracks. You can get a limited edition green vinyl, a CD digital digipack, or a digital release. It's all there. Adrian, I mean, you are bringing this material, the new stuff, the old stuff, the Vandenberg stuff, all to the United States here coming up in February. We can't wait. Now, I don't know if you ever really still keep in contact with David Coverdale very much, but he's always
oh, yeah.
he's been talking about winding down Whitesnake. Would you do like some kind of last appearance or something if Whitesnake did like a final show? I mean, there's been so many great musicians that came through the Whitesnake camp. I feel like every era should be celebrated at some point.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I would absolutely do it if my schedule allows it, but I would do everything I can to make it work, because it would be epic, you know. It would be epic to do something like that. And as everybody knows, David and I are really good friends. Still, you know, we're almost on a daily basis. We send back back and forth politically incorrect jokes and stuff, you know, and we both like.
No, I was gonna say, no wonder you guys hit it off so much, because he's kind of like you on his Twitter
yeah.
posts. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, that would be great, you know. Who knows? You know, I'm like James Bond, but I say never say never.
And that's how it should be. Keeping that open mind, especially in music, is so key. And so many of those memories, and like, that's what I grew up on whenever I first discovered music. Cause I'm only 39. So when I started seeing the video for Here I Go Again, and I started to put together like, oh my gosh, like David Coverdale had this whole history in Deep Purple, and then you and Vandenberg, and then like Vivian Campbell and Dio. And then he goes to Def. So yeah. All that stuff started to connect. And Whitesnake was sort of that band that connected. There's like 6 degrees of Whitesnake. You can connect to any band almost ever,
yeah.
ever made. Right.
Yeah, true. Yeah, true. I look at it that way too, because I became a huge Coverdale fan when I heard the song Burn. You know, I go, oh,
yeah.
but what is that? And him and Glenn Hughes singing totally different voices, and then there's amazing harmony vocals, and they're both the solo spots. I mean, what a band that was. When the live videos that still circulate on YouTube now, the first show that they did, play the live material, go, man, that was one of those legendary bands that are still kind of untouched now. That was like Zeppelin, like early Rainbow, Van Halen, you know, those bands. There's never going to be a proper substitute for those kind of bands.
Yes, which is why it's so important that we keep these songs alive and we keep these memories going.
Yeah.
And that this is just, especially for me, like I said, I'm a younger fan that didn't get to see Whitesnake in 1987 because I was only 3 years old. Now,
yeah.
to be able to have this opportunity to see Jeff Tate from Queensryche, to see Vandenberg on stage, it's special to me. And I go see these bands, whether it be Kiss or Aerosmith, all these farewell tours, I go to them because that music is that important and impactful to me.
It is.
And I get to, it gets to live on. So,
yeah, I totally agree. You know, and no matter what people were kind of mumbling a couple of years ago, rock music is dead. Well, it's not. You know,
never.
Who's touring, you know? And look at like the Motley Crue, Def Leppard shows there. Like, it's like 60, 70, 100,000 people coming down. And we played the Monsters Rock Cruise twice now. I mean, people go, you know, it's nothing has changed. The electricity is there. Everybody goes crazy. They sing the songs with you. You know, it's amazing. And there's no alternative to it. It gives you the same emotion.
Before we let you go, Adrian, I'm curious because we've had Michael Schenker on this show before, and I know you've run around and done some shows with Michael, but he's, as a guitar player, I love his work, but he has said he has no influences. He's not influenced by anything. Is that, for one, is that even possible? Because for you, your influences come out in a major way, whether it be Hendrix or Stevie Ray Vaughan or Deep Purple. Some of that stuff really comes out, especially in some of the newer albums. But for Michael to say, like, he's not influenced by guitarist,
well,
is that possible?
No, I don't think it's possible, because especially when you start playing, you usually start playing, because you're, in my case, I heard Jimi Hendrix on the radio. I go, holy, what is that? And then I heard Eric Clapton in the early John Mayall versions, and then you get inspired. And the way I describe it, I always hear echoes of all the players I love in my solos.
Yeah.
But you make your own pie out of all those ingredients that are in your mind. And I've also I'm a big fan of Michael. He's an amazing player, and he's playing better than ever. And he also mentioned, you know, that people like Leslie West were influencing on him, and Jimmy Page. So maybe sometimes, you know, he's not in the mood to talk about it or whatever. But it could be.
I agree with that. I do that. Michael is an interesting guy. Like, he's so different to interview. Like, you never know where it's going to go. So,
yeah.
And that's what I like sometimes. I like unpredictability. That's why we love rock and roll music, because it's unpredictable. And I just want to congratulate you again for such a great album in Sin. Again, I want to make sure everyone goes and gets it and checks it out. And just for all your years of influential guitar playing, and for just being an all-around cool, fun guy that I would get along with. I got to come back and say hi in person here.
Yeah, absolutely.
The tour. So it's been a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Continued success, Adrian. Can't wait to see
Thanks very much,
you guys
man.
Out here, man. It's going to be great.
See you soon. Take
Thanks,
care.
You bet.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.